From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Annette John Hall. At age 70, photographer David Leeb is having his first ever retrospective at the Philadelphia Museum of Art. It's a 200-piece show that chronicles the evolution of Leeb's style, rooted in his experiences as a gay man. What makes this show especially significant is that Leeb thought he would never live to see it. More than 25 years ago, Leeb and his partner, Jack Potter, were diagnosed as HIV positive. They quit their jobs in Philadelphia, moved to upstate New York, and basically waited to die. During that time, Leeb made photographs of Potter, photographs that he never expected anyone to see. Why is it important to look back at these photos and understand the genesis of a disease that was initially viewed as a death sentence? And what do these images tell us about that time? Today on The Why, staying power. So, you were at U of Arts in the 1960s, where you were a gay male, but this was still a time when a lot of people still weren't coming out. What was that like for you?
You know, there certainly were gay people in art school. That's no surprise to anybody. But you wouldn't have known it when I was there. I did not know a single out person in the entire school.
Not one.
Not one. And I, of course, I wasn't out myself. I was terrified of being out. It's very different from the way it is now.
So, David, you eventually became a teacher at the University of the Arts, and that's how you came out. How did you do it?
You know, I had just been through 4 years of school without knowing a single gay person there, and I didn't have that support, and I wanted to provide that. So I devised this way of doing it, and I would show slides of my work. I'd show the slides, and I'd just talk about how I made them in my work, and like this was my boyfriend, or this was so on. And that way, I started to come out to my classes without it being an awkward process.
So, Jack, you met David at dinner with a mutual friend named Jonathan. What was your impression of David?
He seemed interesting. It wasn't very long before I wondered why Jonathan might not have taken it on himself to introduce us before.
And Jack is a horticulturist. He was the curator of the Scott Arboretum. And so I invited him back to look at my roof deck, where I grew a few plants.
I think I also needed to help you carry something just terribly heavy back from Jonathan's place.
Oh, that's right.
A piece of equipment.
Yes, it was some exercise equipment that I
sure you
didn't
could
use.
Not have managed it on your own.
No, no way. Yeah.
There is just absolutely no way that could have been handled by you.
No.
I get it. And so there was an absolute love connection made.
Well, yeah, I mean, it developed, of course, but yes. And around December, I had a terrible flu or something, and Jack came and took care of me and sort of lived with me, taking care of me, and he really never left after that.
Were you partners when you were first each diagnosed with HIV?
No, it was. Just a little before we'd met, and for David, a year before me. And then for me, it was early in the year that we met, early mm-hmm. in 1989.
Mm-hmm. And so in the 80s, to get a diagnosis of being HIV positive was almost akin to a death sentence. And so your diagnosis was HIV positive.
And so was David's.
And so was David's. When you guys got that diagnosis, what did you think?
It's funny. It was a shock, but no. We knew that something like half of gay men in our age groups were HIV positive. And anyone would have interpreted any miscellaneous ache and pain or swelling of a lymph node, or you couldn't help but think of those as signs of doom.
How did this, you know, dual diagnosis, how did that impact your relationship in a positive or negative way?
Well, I thought it was going to be a short-term relationship.
It must have made me much easier to put up.
I mean, I really didn't think we were going to live very long. And he was a wonderful, loving person. And you know, we needed support. We supported each other.
So it was about this time that you decided to leave Philadelphia?
At 92. We can remember a party out in the country. And we just felt good being out in that air with that water among friends. We quickly resolved to move to the country.
And it was also kind of a last adventure. And I'd always wanted to live in the country at some point during my life, and I figured if I didn't do it then, there wasn't a lot of time left to do it.
Were you having your health challenges? Was it up and down?
It was slowly down.
Really?
Yeah. And we were slowing down. But we made a life there. I mean, we built the house and we made a garden and we initially grew vegetables and we made friends.
And, of course, Jack grew a wonderful meadow and garden.
Sure.
Which then I photographed. And those pictures are now, some of them are up on the walls of the Philadelphia Museum of Art.
Well, this is what I wanted to get to. You started taking pictures of Jack during that time. I mean, and it was just the minutia of life. Why were you doing that kind of chronicle?
You know, at that time, our energy was very low. And we spent a lot of time, you know, in the morning taking care of ourselves, getting showered and doing our potions or medications or little exercises or whatever we had to do. And we were new to the house. We loved it. We were new to the countryside. There was great sunlight that came in the windows. Mm-hmm. And there was just a certain pleasure and peacefulness about that time. And it was a great pleasure to make the photographs. And I didn't think I'd had the energy to ever print them. And I didn't know if I'd ever have the time to ever print them. And I wasn't sure exactly why I was making them. But it was a pleasure to do. And I just made them and said, well, who knows what the future will bring. And I'll just do this. And I did it.
When did you realize that you were going to make it, that you were going to live, that your health had taken a turn for the better?
Well, you know, for me, it came about slowly, that realization. We had been through so many new drugs that had come along and had failed, and so that when this came along, we were kind of waiting. We were in the first wave of people with AIDS, so everything that happened was new, and we didn't know the future.
It's the drugs that saved us. You know, the saying then was, it's the virus, stupid. It was the virus, and we needed the antiretroviral drugs. And they came along really just in time for us.
A lot of young people don't remember the AIDS crisis and weren't even born. Does that make storytelling through your art even more important?
Well, I suppose so. I mean, but I suppose that's true of all of history, in a way. But yes, particularly when you live through something like that, you want it to be remembered and not repeated. And you want the experience to have had some value. And, you know, the people who we've lost and are not here, we want their lives to have some meaning. And so storytelling is certainly a way of making that happen.
Why is it important for us to remember the crisis that you two were a part of, and to look back on your work and see what it was like?
Well, first of all, the crisis isn't over. There are many places around the world and even in this country where there's still a crisis, more so in communities of color in this country and in other parts of the world, Africa, parts of Asia, Russia, I don't know, many places. The drugs are not available to everybody. There are many people who cannot afford the drugs around the world. So there are many, many people who are still getting infected and dying of AIDS. So that's one thing. And the other was, I think it's the political atmosphere of the time slowed down getting the word out about the disease and getting funding and development of drugs and treatment. For example, the Times wouldn't write about it. They even had a rule back then that they couldn't use the word gay unless it was in the title of an organization. Ronald Reagan famously would not publicly say the word AIDS. It was very slow to come into our consciousness as such a serious situation.
If you treat people with HIV, you can stop the spread of the virus. You can end the epidemic. But it relies on people having good access to medicine and feeling comfortable in getting it, not being afraid that their families will see their pills, things like that. And we're not there.
Thank you both so much for coming in and talking to us today.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Annette.
The Y was produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, and Alex Stern under the editorial direction of Katie Colinari. Today's show was produced by Kelsey Hansen. Drop us a line on Twitter at AnnetteJH, at Shai Ben-Yaakov, or at Alex Ray Stern. And don't forget to download us wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.